and welcome to the Dr. Nyman Show. Today is Wednesday, January 4th, 2017, and Happy New Year to all listeners. Hope everyone's had a really great holiday. So what's been going on in the world of avian influenza is just there's a growing diversity among the sequences, and I think that's what Dr. Nyman would like to talk about today, among other things. So, Dr. Nyman, the floor is yours.
Okay, thank you, Ryan, and happy holidays to you. Happy New Year. I thought it'd be worthwhile to kind of give an update, largely because quite a few sequences were released this week and some last week, and so you get to a critical mass where you get a much better idea of what's going on. This is largely limited to Europe as far as the new sequences are concerned. But the sequences may dovetail nicely with reports of some fairly major outbreaks in southwestern France, as well as in Hungary and Bulgaria. And the sequence data may kind of shed some light on that. These three outbreaks I just mentioned actually are largely duck farms, and they may really all have something in common. So just as a bit of a review, and from the scientific standpoint, it's pretty obvious that the H5 is being spread by wild birds, and they follow very predictable routes. And as this timeline and data continue to grow, they generate specific patterns, which allows the new data to be analyzed fairly quickly and fairly accurately. I've always had the stories in the sequence, and finally sequences are starting to come out regarding the current H5N8 outbreak. There's still a lot of room for improvement. There are several countries that have had a lot of outbreaks and have released very limited sequence data. The sequence data is useful in a general sense, just identifying potentially different versions of the virus, which may have different pathogenicities with poultry, and conceivably could develop into having problems for humans also. Just as an aside, there are more cats that are apparently dying from H5N6 in South Korea. Finding about people and cats or mammals in general is a little bit tricky there.
Just to interject here, if you don't mind, Dr. Nyman, just to give an update on that particular point, there's three cats that are positive in South Korea that they found dead. One adult cat, who was the father, and then two kittens. So they've tested that, and they're testing a bunch of different cats in South Korea right now for the various things, because they're finding other dead cats in other cities in that province. So I guess they're in the process of testing. I just thought I'd put that in there.
Okay, and how new that is still a little bit open. This may be a reporting issue again. H5N6 has been in China for several years now with regard to mammals, as in human cases. First human case was in 2014, and those numbers have gone up each year, and there was at least one example that I can recall that H5N6 was in a cat in the sequence. Was virtually identical to a human in the same location. Getting the news out is a little bit tricky, so it's not clear if the cat really belonged to the human or if they just both happened to be in the same area and got infected by the same virus. So H5N6 has been known to to infect cats. And there were reports out of Korea of H5N8. And you know, as most of the listeners know, the H5 and H5N6 and H5N8 and H5N1 is really all the same Fijian clade 2.3.4.4, which is a derivative of the original 2.3 Fijian that was first identified in 2005 in Fujian province in China, and that really is the subclade that caused all of the initial human cases in China. So all of the initial cases were all due to 2.3, and then a few years later when it evolved a little bit and the name got a little bit longer, it's 2.3.4. So 2.3.4 was the version that of Fujian that was that caused most of the human cases. 2.3.2 is caused some more recent cases, so it's not limited to that one subclade. But that subclade can kill humans, and that is the subclade that's now evolved into 2.3.4.4, and that was responsible for the outbreaks in the U.S. and Canada and Taiwan in 2014. And it's also the one that's responsible for the current outbreaks, both H5N8, that's expanding in multiple continents, as well as H5N6, which most of the activity is, most of reported activity this current is largely in South Korea and Japan, but a recent report from China indicated H5N6 is quite widespread in China, and they actually are replacing H5N1 as the dominant cause of poultry outbreaks. And unfortunately, there does seem to be a bit of a lag, so exactly how current the situation with H5N6 is in China is kind of difficult to pin down and kind of get that information after the fact. But anyway, we're going to focus on H5N8 because that's where the new sequences were. And just to give a little bit of a background, and it's relevant because, again, it's a wild bird story. It's kind of the same countries that were involved with the first major geographical spread of H5N1, which happened in 2005-2006. And some sequences that were released, you know, not in the last week or two, but, you know, within the last month were actually sequences from Qinghai Lake, which were H5N8, and those were the same as the sequences at Ouse Lake, the same general lineage. And so all 18 segments kind of formed a consensus sequence for both, you know, at both Ouse Lake and Tiva in Russia that extends into Mongolia. And Qinghai Lake, which is in central China, so I just like there. And just as a point of reference, that was really the source of the H5N1 clade 2.2, which is also called the Qinghai strain, which was identified in the spring of 2005. There was a massive die-off predominantly in bar-headed geese with some brown-headed gulls was kind of number two as far as species deaths were concerned. And the outbreak in 2016 actually had the same species, so they were mostly bar-headed geese again. And you know, as some of the listeners might recollect, bar-headed geese have a special hemoglobin that allows them to fly at high altitude. They can actually fly over the Himalaya mountains, and they can travel up to 1,000 miles in 24 hours. So they fly fast and far, and so they are capable of spreading virus quite widely, and especially since they go to Siberia for breeding. In an area where multiple flyways overlap, bringing the virus into that environment allows it to infect a number of different species, and that then fly out of that general area in the winter or in the fall, they start flying. And they go in multiple directions. I mean, there's flyways that go from Siberia to Europe and through the Middle East and on to North Africa and then on to West Africa. And then other flyways, you know, one goes north and south, so it goes into India. And then other ones kind of overlap and allow the virus to fly into the west coast, the east coast of Asia, which would go into South Korea and Japan. At least those are the two countries that report these outbreaks. They probably go into other countries that have poor surveillance or poor reporting. But the bottom line is that back in 2005, there was a major geographical spread of the H5N1 at the time. The Qinghai strain was at Qinghai Lake. It subsequently showed up in Russia, Kazakhstan, and Mongolia over the summer where they go up to breed. And then the prediction was that since all the H5N1 in those three countries were the Qinghai strain and H5N1 had never been reported in any of those countries, at least the highly pathogenic version that was prevalent in Asia, predictions were made that because they were in the overlapping flyways, the H5N1 could expand pretty dramatically. In 2005, it had not been outside. It had not been west of China. It had been in other countries in Eastern Asia. It had been in Japan and South Korea. It had been in Southeast Asia and on into Indonesia. And of course, it had been in China. But after 2005, the predictions that were made in the fall or in the summer, I should say, came true in the fall. When it started showing up in Europe, most of the countries that had it at the time denied it. I think there were only four countries that acknowledged H5N1 was there in the fall of 2005. But as you may recall, it started causing fatal human infections at the beginning of 2006 in Turkey. And that was followed by infections in Iraq and Azerbaijan and then on into Egypt and even had a human case in Djibouti and eventually there was a human case in Nigeria. A lot of these human cases were fatal. And a lot of the countries that weren't reporting H5N1 in 2005 did start reporting in 2006. In early 2006, I think it got up to about 50 countries. So there are 50 countries that had never had an H5N1 infection previously. And by the summer of 2006, they had reported it, OIE reports. And, it's obviously transmitted by the wild birds that all of these H5N1 cases, regardless of whether it was in wild birds, poultry, or humans, were all the Qinghai strain. And all linked to these migration patterns, both with the virus flying down from Siberia in the fall and back up to Siberia and Mongolia in the spring. And, it's really the spring migration that produced all of these outbreaks in either farms or a lot of mute swans. And swans were kind of the popular species to report the H5N1. They're large and kind of hard to miss. And quite a few mute swans that died in Europe, and that covered a lot of the countries there. Some of the other countries that didn't have much surveillance, just reported in poultry. But the bottom line was that H5N1 spread far and wide. Qinghai strain kind of faded away. It's still in Egypt, though. It became endemic there. So it's still in the poultry. Still kills humans every year in Egypt. And so that's a recurring thing. But the H5N8 is kind of a new version of that. For historical reference, the Fujian H5N1 started resorting quite a bit several years ago, and generated a whole series of new serotypes that all had the same Fujian H5, but there were, you know, examples of H5N2, H5N3, H5N5, H5N8, H5N9, all of which had the same Fujian H5. And the more recent outbreaks were in 2014. In 2014, there was a version, the first affected poultry in the spring in South Korea. There were some cases in Japan also, mostly in wild birds. And then the virus managed to fly to Russia. It wasn't that widespread. It actually got reported in Russia late. It's a September collection that wasn't really tested till December. So it got reported a little bit after the fact, but then it showed up in Europe, and they had a minor outbreak. It wasn't like the 2005 outbreak, but they did have cases. It was the same lineage that had been in South Korea, but Japan, it was a little bit more complex at the time. They not only had the same H5N8 that had been in Europe, but they had two other lineages there. One of them was in a crane that gave rise to the outbreaks in Taiwan and North America. And it's worth noting that those two outbreaks were particularly devastating. The one outbreak in Taiwan mostly affected geese and duck farms, and it really devastated the duck and goose farming there. A lot of farms affected, and a lot of culling that went on. And there was some diversity there. There were new reassortants, new serotypes that showed up. There was an addition to the H5N8. It was H5N2 and H5N3. They all had the same H5, which matched that crane in Japan. But they had acquired some internal genes from wild birds, as well as the N2 or the N3. So they gave rise to three different serotypes. And even the H5N8 was a reassortant. So most of the genes matched the crane in Japan, but several of the genes, the internal genes, had been swapped out. So there was a fair amount of diversity in Taiwan. And the same thing happened in North America. It was first reported in Canada and British Columbia. It was H5N2. The same thing happened in North America as in Taiwan. The H5N8 flew into the area. There were dual infections involving the H5N8 and low-path wild birds that were native to the area. And that gave rise to reassortants. The H5N8 really maintained all eight of its gene segments, but in North America, there was H5N1 and H5N2. In both of those cases, the N1 and the N2 came from North American wild birds, and in addition to other internal genes. So each of those two new serotypes not only had a new combination for the H and the N, it was the same H5 that was from Asia and from the crane, actually, that lineage represented by the crane in Japan. But they were mixtures that the reassortment happened in North America, and the genes that replaced the Asian genes were North American genes. So the N1 and the N2 were both from North America, and they had various combinations of internal genes. And all of the internal genes that didn't match the crane did match wild birds in North America. So, and in that case, in the U.S., there were some geographical differences that the H5N1 and H5N8 were predominantly in the West. All of the outbreaks in California actually were H5N8, including two poultry outbreaks, one in turkeys and one in chickens. and they all happened in the fall. And there wasn't anything reported for the Midwest until the spring. And then when the birds started flying back, it was predominantly the H5N2, and the H5N2 was found in a limited number of wild birds, but it started showing up in turkey farms, actually, and in the southern states. It was down in Missouri and in Kansas and I think Illinois or Kentucky, but it was generally in the Midwest, and most of the initial cases were further south, and then within a few days, it wasn't that much longer that it started showing up in Minnesota. Minnesota is the number one turkey producer in the United States, and it totally devastated the turkey farms in Minnesota. But it wasn't specific to turkeys. Shortly thereafter, it started showing up in Iowa. Iowa is the number one egg producer in the United States, and so it hit the chicken farms, the egg layers. There was a shortage of both turkeys and eggs in the United States in 2015 due to this outbreak in the spring. And then it kind of faded away. The last year, there really wasn't much activity. Surveillance went up dramatically in the United States. It really started with the outbreak in the West, and the initial surveillance that went up wasn't across the country. It was mostly concentrated in the West. And after the outbreak in British Columbia, the U.S. quickly identified H5N8, H5N1, and H5N2. Most of the positives were in 100-killed wild birds. So these were birds that were apparently healthy, were shot by hunters, and then the Department of Agriculture and various affiliated agencies got permission from the hunters to sample their game that they were bringing home, and they found all three of the serotypes in these 100-fold birds. So most of the activity, the positives, were in the fall during hunting season, and so theoretically these were asymptomatic birds. The hunters weren't just shooting sick birds. They were shooting the birds that were flying, and they were apparently healthy birds, but they were infected with the virus, and the swabbing did identify the virus and did generate a whole series of sequences and confirmed that, you know, they pretty much all had the same constellation. The H5N8 matched Asia. The H5N2 had the same set of North American genes, and the H5N1 had its characteristic set. So that kind of sets the background as to how this works with H5N8 and what kind of reassortment could be anticipated and what kind of geographical distribution of those different versions of the virus could be expected. And frankly, that's exactly what's going on this year with the H5N8. And so, as I mentioned earlier, initially the outbreak in Europe was being characterized as originating at Eads Lake near Kiva in southern Siberia in Russia. And Eads Lake extends into Mongolia, and they've had periodic die-offs there in multiple years, I believe. They had only duplicated in 2006. They had it again a couple of years ago, and they had it again, it's last year now, in 2016. And so multiple years have seen those outbreaks, and generally when there's an outbreak, it looks like either in the fall or the following spring, the same virus shows up in Europe. And that's what's happening this year. It's happening at a higher level than it's ever happened before. There's a lot of H5N8, and the initial sequences were done in Germany, both in North and South Germany, as well as in Denmark. Only the H and the N genes were sequenced, and they were compared, and they did match the sequences from Eads Lake and seen highlights, so they kind of confirmed that the virus in Europe was linked to these earlier die-offs in Russia and in China. And then a full sequence came out of Poland. It was in northern Poland, and they were the first country to generate a sequence of all 18 segments of the current H5N8 in Europe. And it turned out that the H5N8 was a reassortant, and even though the H5 and the N8 matched the outbreak in Russia and China, most of the genes actually matched that. There were three genes that that did not. It was the PBT, the PA, and the NP genes. They all matched wild birds either in Asia or in Europe. Interestingly, the NP gene, the sequence matched almost exclusively European isolates. So it's a European NP. The other two genes have been seen in wild birds both in Asia and Europe. And so it was quite different. There's only 18 segments, and since it was H5N8, the H5 and the N8 weren't really going to be different. So there's really only 16 that could change, and in this case, three out of those 16 were from other wild birds and represented reassortment. So that kind of defined that strain, and after Poland released their sequence, Sweden had a series of sequences from an outbreak at a chicken farm, and they also had a wild bird, and they did full sequences on that, and they had the same constellation, and those sequences indicated that not only was the constellation the same, they had the same three genes that matched other wild birds and did not match Tiva Qinghai, indicating they were acquired by a reassortment. But the lineages were similar, so that all the sequences that had those three genes had the other five genes were closely related. The phylogenetic tree, they all end up falling onto the same branch. And so you could kind of just look at sequences that you only have the H5 and the N8 and still identify what the internal genes were likely to look like, because if they matched the H5 and the N8 seen in Poland or in Sweden, they would likely have the same three genes that were acquired. And then a full sequence was published for England, and that it also matched. And so it looked like that was the dominant sequence in Europe. But then a sequence was published from Croatia. And the sequence from Croatia was a little bit different. It instead of having three genes, it only had two genes. And it was two of the three. It had a PD2 as well as an NP. But although that was the same as the dominant, those two genes that are acquired were really easily distinguished, and they were acquired by an independent reassortment. So it wasn't that first the virus picked up two of the genes and then picked up a third one. And so the Croatia sequence was not a precursor to the more dominant sequence. And that was evident also with the other genes, the genes that hadn't picked up genes by reassortment still had slightly different lineages. So if you did phylogenetic trees, the dominant one, all the other genes fell onto the same branches, whereas the Croatia sequence fell onto a distinct branch. And there were two other sequences that came out of Croatia that just the H and the N were generated, and those matched the H and the N for the one that was already present. And so then this week, the sequence analysis moved forward fairly dramatically. France published two sequences, one from the north, and the northern sequence actually matched that dominant sequence. So it was had the same three genes that had been picked up by Poland and Sweden and England. And then the sequence from the south ended up matching Croatia. So France released two full sets of sequences, and they defined two different constellations of genes that matched prior sequences. So that kind of firmed up the fact that there were two different versions of H5N8 in Europe, and they and wasn't limited to an isolated case. You had it in southern France, and you had it in three different sequences from two different places, although the two places weren't that far apart, but three different wild birds all had essentially the same sequence. You know, they all definitely had the same H and N, and presumably the internal genes were the same, and then you had it in southern France. And so the sequence from France firmed up that the sequence from Croatia was, you know, legitimate. It wasn't an isolated case. It was in two different countries that both were in southern Europe, but you know, one was in eastern Europe, one was in western Europe. And then seven sequences were then published by Poland. So there were seven more sequences. Poland, as you recall, published the first full sequence. These seven sequences weren't full. They were just H and N, and for two of the sequences, it was actually just the H. But the three locations that were further south in Poland that sequences were generated for all matched the Croatian sequence. And so pattern was starting to set up that the three southern sequences from Poland matched the sequences in Croatia. And so did the sequence in southern France. And just as an aside, the outbreak in France seemed to be fueled in part by a one particular farm that had sent out ducks to a lot of different farms in southwestern France. And right after they sent out the ducks, they found out that they had H5N8. So the ducks that went out were asymptomatic at the time, and then shortly thereafter they were symptomatic, and so were any other birds that were commingled with them. And so the outbreak was kind of fueled by this initial shipment. There have been quite a few farms. It's not clear whether all these farms but they could have extended where the shipment brought the virus into the area, and then the virus could have been tracked to other nearby farms. And since one of those farms is the ones that was sequenced, it's likely that most or all of the poultry outbreaks in southwestern France are due to this Croatian strain, if you will. And so it was setting up that the Croatian strain was a little bit to the south. And then the other four sequences that were in Poland weren't exactly the same as the Croatian sequence, but they were closer to the Croatian sequence than the more dominant sequence that was found in the northern sequences. And two of those sequences, the N wasn't released yet, it was just the H, but the H almost looked like a precursor to the Croatian sequences. It was right at the base of the tree that just had Croatian sequences on it. And then the other two sequences, again, were more like the Croatian sequence than the other sequences. And but the N's were released for those two, and the NH were actually quite a bit different than the other NH, suggesting that this might actually be yet another reassortant and might be somehow related to the an earlier version of the sequence that ended up being identified first in Croatia. And that may be signaling additional diversity, and that these other two sets of sequences in Poland may really represent additional reassortance. Unfortunately, so far the only sequences that were released are the H and the N for two of them, and the H only for the other two. I mean, the two H's that don't have N's really are virtually identical to each other, and the two with the H and the N, they're also virtually identical to each other. So they may really be signaling one or two additional reassortance, indicating that there's a fair amount of diversity within the H5NH that are circulating in Europe, but there may be some geographical differences in that this Croatian sequence is dominant in southern Europe, whereas the initial sequences that came out are dominant in northern Europe. But the diversity actually goes beyond the reassortance in H5N8, because the H5N5 has also been identified in Europe. The first example was in the Netherlands, and they said that the H5 was the same as the H5N8. So that would indicate that this was much like what had happened in North America and Taiwan, in the sense that the H5N8 had actually reassorted and picked up a new N and created a new serotype. So unfortunately, none of the sequences from H5N5 have been released yet, but the H5N5 in the Netherlands was followed by H5N5 case in Montenegro, and then that was followed by an H5N5 case in Italy. And if you actually list these three locations on a map, they actually form a straight line. And there's a fourth case in Germany. It's H5, and it's not H5N8. They haven't said what the N is yet, but it does fall on the same line with the other three H5N5s, raising the possibility that Germany is actually the fourth country that has picked up, that has identified this H5N5 case. And based upon what happened previously with the H5NH, when it created a new serotype in either Taiwan or North America, it wasn't limited to just the N. It picked up additional internal genes. So there's a good chance the H5N5 has a not only has a different N, but also has a different constellation. So that's really kind of the end of the line on the sequences. Actually, there were a couple other ones. There was a recent sequence from Croatia that was published today. It was collected on December 27th, so this was just a few days ago. And they did release the H and the N, and the H and the N matched the initial sequences from Croatia. So that version is clearly still circulating. And as in Poland, did another sequence, which was way up in the north again. And that really matched the first sequence from Poland. So that was the dominant sequence. And that actually was a recent publication, but not a recent collection. That had actually been collected back in November. And that did match, so that's yet another example of that quote-unquote dominant sequence, but it may be just dominant in Northern Europe. So that really is the end of the sequence story. Now, the pathogenicity story may be interesting because as I said, the sequence in France is geographically and probably epidemiologically linked to this Croatian sequence. So the Croatian sequence is in southwestern France, and southwestern France has a pretty serious problem with ducks. And this may be related to that initial farm and that kind of fuel things, but it is kind of getting out of control, and They are stepping up culling starting tomorrow, and they're expected to cull, I think, a million birds in the next several days to a week or so. So that outbreak is getting a bit out of hand. And then, as it turns out, Hungary has an outbreak. I think there's 161 farms that have been reported in OIE reports, and they're kind of reporting them weekly. They were reporting them daily. And so I would think that number is well over 100 now. And they are kind of concentrated in one area in southern Hungary, where there are pretty dense population of duck farms. And so these are ducks again. And that outbreak is right between the Croatian sequences, which are just to the south of that outbreak, and the sequences in southern Poland, which is just to the north of that outbreak. So there's a good possibility. Hungary hasn't released any sequences, but there's a good possibility that the outbreak in Hungary is also due to this Croatian strain or clade or constellation. And then Bulgaria just reported a fairly major outbreak that's expanding pretty quickly in southern Bulgaria. And that also involves ducks, and that also is really not that far from the Croatian sequences. And again, Bulgaria hasn't released any sequences. But there's a distinct possibility that this Croatian sequence, which is definitely linked to the outbreak in France and is definitely showing a pattern of being present in southern Europe, there's a good chance that when Hungary does release sequences from their outbreak, that it will be the same Croatian sequence, and there's a reasonable chance that that will also apply to Bulgaria. So it's possible that this Croatian sequence is particularly effective at spreading among ducks, or it could just be that there's a lot of duck farms in southern Europe that are kind of on a flight path for the birds, and since the birds that flew over there are the Croatian version, and the farms are underneath those flying birds, that that's given rise to the outbreaks, and the farms are fairly close to each other, and so it could be that any farm that has a lot of poultry at high density is susceptible to whatever H5N8 is in the area. So there may be coincidence that these dense farm areas are right where the H5N8, or the Croatian version, was flying, and that's why they're all H5N8 or speculated to be H5N8. So right now the Croatia sequences are limited to France, Croatia, and Poland at this time. But frankly, that's about the only sequences that have been released from southern Europe, other than an early sequence from southern Germany, which was essentially the same sequence as northern Germany. So most of the southern sequences have been the Croatian sequence, but there really haven't been that many sequences yet. And so that's one of the problems in doing this analysis. The benefit is that these patterns have been set up in previous outbreaks. The negative is there's a lot of birds that have been infected, and particularly a lot of farms now. And getting sequences from farms is pretty straightforward, because there's generally a lot of birds that are infected, and it goes through these flocks fairly dramatically. And if they're looking to isolate the virus or directly sequence the virus from the tissues, it's pretty straightforward that generally if you get birds that have just died, you know, after they die, the virus does start to decompose. But the birds that just died, or if the birds are very sick and about to die, then they're lucky to have the highest viral load, and they're quick enough that the integrity of the virus would be pretty high, and integrity of the sample. And therefore, it's not, you know, a Herculean task to get full sequences from these farms. And you know, Germany's had a lot of outbreaks, more wild birds than farms, but they have had farms, and they're very proficient at collecting samples and generating sequences. Unfortunately, they haven't released any full sequences yet, and they've just done a couple H&N sequences. Denmark's the same thing, that they can generate sequences fairly easily, and so can the Netherlands, and so can England, and so can France, and so can Israel. Israel's had some major outbreaks also. So it would be useful if these other countries that have the resources and have the dead body, so to speak, with high levels of virus, would actually generate sequences. I'm sure they already have, but would actually release those sequences, so the picture could be a little clearer as to how diverse the virus is in the H5N8. I assume the diversity is extremely high, based upon four different constellations from a very limited amount of sequencing. And suggestions that there, well, confirmation that there's at least one other serotype, and suggestions that there's at least one or two additional constellations based upon the H&N sequences. And there may be a time difference. Some of this diversity may be in later waves, and that's why the initial sequences looked so homogeneous and the later sequences look so different. But I would expect that these sequences would be forthcoming because, as I said, this is a very, very large outbreak. It's the largest on record for H5 outside of Asia. And it's certainly bigger than the H5N1 in 2005, 2006. And the likelihood that there'll be even bigger outbreaks in the spring looms large. And so it'll be useful to at least get these fall sequences kind of in order and get these sequences that I'm sure are already generated to put them at CSAT or GenBank and make them public. And so there's a little better idea on exactly what's going on. So that kind of wraps it up. There's, you know, there's activity in the H5N6, obviously. They're still waiting for an update on the H7N2 and the cats. So the avian influenza cats in New York. So the avian influenza stories are quite varied, but the H5N8 is interesting for this report simply because multiple countries have released sequences in the last week or two. And those additional sequences are kind of creating a story that's pretty easy to tell. So that wrapped it up, first report for 2017.
Okay, well, thank you for the information on that. Listeners can always visit our website at recombinomics.co for all the latest information. Again, that is always updated all the time, including the maps, so be looking out for that. And thank you, everyone. Have a good day.